Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Antares fourth quarter and full year 2013 operating and financial results conference call. Throughout today's recorded presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulty hearing the presentation, please press the star followed by the zero on your telephone for operator assistance. I will now hand the conference over to Jack Howarth, Antares Vice President of Corporate Affairs. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Grace, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on today's call. We announced fourth quarter 2013 operating results and recent achievements earlier this morning, and the press release can be found on the Antares website at www.antarespharma.com under the Investor Relations tab. Before we begin, please be advised that during the course of this call, we may make forward-looking statements concerning the company that are not historical facts. These forward-looking statements may include, but are not limited to, statements concerning the timing of product sales, market estimates, market potential and growth prospects, technology platforms, and working capital needs. Forward-looking statements provide Antares' current expectation or forecast of future events. Actual results could differ materially from those reflected in these forward-looking statements due to decisions of regulatory authorities and Antares' ability to execute on its development plans, capital needs, and general financial, economic, regulatory, and political conditions affecting the pharmaceutical industry generally. Additional information concerning these risks and uncertainties are contained in the Risk Factors section of Antares' annual report on Form 10-K and in Antares' periodic filings and other filings made with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Antares is providing this information as of the date of this release and does not undertake any obligation to update any forward-looking statements contained in this earnings call as a result of new information, future events, or circumstances after the date hereof, except as required by law or otherwise. The company cautions investors not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Joining me on the call today are Dr. Paul Watton, President and Chief Executive Officer, Robert Apple, Chief Financial Officer and President of the Parenteral Products Group, and LaRue Yuesta, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Pharmaceuticals. After the presentation, we will open the lines for Q&A. I'll now turn the call over to Paul Watton. Paul?
Thanks, Jack, and good morning, everyone. We've had a busy couple of months since our last call, and although we've made recent presentations with new information at the J.P. Morgan and Cowen Healthcare conferences, I'd like to take some time this morning to give you an update on two of our near-term internal growth drivers, the Entrectinib launch and the progress we've made in the QuickShot testosterone study, before turning over the call to Bob for the financial results. LaRue will be joining us for the Q&A session later on in the call. Now, many of you have recently heard me use the term transform or transformational when describing our company. Well, the approval and the launch of Entrectinib was truly a transformational moment in our history as we transition to a specialty pharmaceutical company. The significance of this approval was that in addition to obtaining our first approved injectable 505(b)(2) NDA for Entrectinib, we also succeeded in obtaining an approval for our device platform, and this has paved the way for additional product opportunities in the future. I'm happy to report to you that this morning that we are delighted with the progress of the launch as it relates to the leading indicators we're using to measure success. Through the first 20 days of the launch, our 25 reps saw 90% of the targeted 2,500 rheumatologists, and this tells us that our sales force has been able to gain access to the rheumatologist's office successfully, and our geographic targeting was spot on, and our call plan was accurate. When we speak to the sales reps on a weekly basis, we're hearing about positive experiences in the rheumatologist's office, and in the majority of visits, commitments to prescribe Entrectinib based on its unique value proposition. There's been high demand for our step-up starter kits, which allow patients to be educated as well as trained on how to properly administer Entrectinib. The feedback we've received thus far also tells us that our insurance verification hotline and copay assistance card utilization is popular and increasing. Our goal from the start of the launch was to make this as an easy process as possible for both patients and physicians, and to give reps every tool necessary in their bag to make the physician visit successful. We've also made tremendous progress on managed care coverage. It's interesting to note that LaRue has been involved in more than 20 product launches and personally led the launch of Enbrel, and he tells me that he's been impressed by the level of third-party payer coverage that has already been obtained within the first month after launch. The majority of commercial plans now cover Atrexup as a Tier 3 benefit, which we believe is reflective of Atrexup's value proposition to payers, and it's had a big impact on the number of plans covering Atrexup right from the launch. And while we don't want to put too much emphasis on early weekly prescription trends, we are monitoring them, as well as shipments from distributors to pharmacies. And based on these data, we know that Atrexup is being prescribed to patients by rheumatologists and that the weekly scripts have increased week over week since the launch. So I would say that in less than a month into the launch, it's looking good and we're on track with our plan as we expected. This is a tremendous opportunity for us because methotrexate is the anchor drug for rheumatoid arthritis. It's been the go-to DMARD of choice for the past 20 years, and we hope it will remain the go-to DMARD for many more years to come. For the rheumatologists and their patients, they can expand and enhance the benefits of methotrexate and keep their patients in low disease control. It's also worth noting that our job is to optimize the use of Atrexup in the treatment paradigm. And it's worth remembering that we're not competing directly with oral methotrexate, and we're not trying to compete directly with the biologics. We're creating a space in the middle of the two by expanding the bioavailability and tolerability of methotrexate through subcutaneous administration, using a proprietary high-tech engineered device to provide precise dosing of methotrexate. Now, before I move on to talk about our quick-shot testosterone program, earlier this week we announced that our sales and marketing partner Leo had launched the Atrexup on March the 3rd to dermatologists for the psoriasis indication. And yesterday we announced the receipt of a second $5 million milestone payment from them. The Atrexup psoriasis indication has strong possibilities for us. There are approximately 7 million psoriasis patients in the U.S., and up to 10% of these may have severe recalcitrant or debilitating psoriasis, which is our current label. Leo has a large database of 50,000 psoriasis patients and will be using 75 sales reps to target approximately 7,000 dermatologists. We ultimately chose to partner with Leo because of their competence and expertise in psoriasis and their established relationships with dermatologists and patients. I anticipate that the launch of the product to dermatologists by Leo will soon begin to drive meaningful revenues for our company. Before moving on, I would like to make a brief statement about recent events regarding litigation that has recently been initiated by Antares and which has subsequently been initiated against Antares. As a policy, Antares doesn't discuss any ongoing litigation or litigation strategies, and I do not intend to say too much on the topic now. But just to be clear, we fully intend to protect the proprietary technology that we have invested in and worked so diligently to create over the five or six years that we've been working together here, and we will vigorously defend any claims made by others about their alleged intellectual property to the extent that such claims seek to undermine Antares. Now, moving on to the quick-shot testosterone program. Last month, we announced positive results from a multi-center phase 2 clinical study evaluating the pharmacokinetic profile of testosterone administered once weekly by subcutaneous injection at doses of 50 and 100 milligrams using the Vivex quick-shot auto-injector in testosterone-deficient adult males. 29 adult males with hypogonadism, or low T, and testosterone blood levels less than 300 nanograms per deciliter were randomized into two groups. The first group received 50 milligrams of testosterone administered subcutaneously with a quick shot device once weekly for 6 weeks, and the second group received 100 milligrams of testosterone using the same device and time sequence. The clinical study also followed patients for 4 weeks after the last dose. The mean testosterone baseline for the 50 milligram group was 214 nanograms per deciliter and 201 in the 100 milligram group. At week one, both doses, 50 milligrams and 100 milligrams, produced normal mean testosterone concentrations at 24 hours post-dose of 434 nanograms per deciliter in the 50 milligram group and 572 nanograms per deciliter in the 100 milligram group. During week six of the study, when patients were already at steady-state pharmacokinetic conditions, the 50-mg and 100-mg groups had average plasma testosterone values within the normal range of 422 and 895 nanograms per deciliter, respectively. So the study demonstrated rapid restoration, consistent maintenance of normal testosterone levels, and dose proportionality of the 50 milligrams and 100 milligrams strength. The once-weekly injection was generally well-tolerated. No injection site pain was reported by 28 of 29 patients, and only 17 patients reported mild to moderate adverse events, which, according to the investigators, were unrelated to either the drug or the device. There were no deaths and no treatment-emergent serious adverse events or discontinuation due to any adverse events in the study. We're very optimistic about the potential for a self-administered once-weekly subcutaneous dose of testosterone based on the outcome of this study. It's clear to us that the administration of testosterone using our proprietary QuickShot device showed that normal testosterone levels can be rapidly restored and then reliably maintained with reduced peak-to-trough fluctuations relative to those associated with intramuscular injections, which we also studied as part of this trial. We believe that the testosterone market will continue to grow due to current underpenetration, a growing awareness of the benefits of treating testosterone deficiency, and the FDA's willingness to continue to look for and approve new therapies for treatment, such as the most recent approval for the product Aveed. It's of interest that the injectable space has grown over the past 5 years at a compound annual prescription growth rate of around 40%, that's 40%, outstripping gel prescription growth of 14% for the same period. Injectable testosterone currently accounts for one-third of the total testosterone prescriptions written annually. And given the current forms of injectable testosterone, we believe that a once-weekly, convenient, precise, five-second subcutaneous administered dose of testosterone through a fine-gauge needle will become the choice route of administration. I'm now going to turn the call over to Bob for a review of the fourth quarter and full-year results. Bob?
Thanks, Paul. I want to echo Paul's comments. 2013 was truly an exceptional year for the company. In addition to getting our first in-house combination drug-device product, a first-pass approval in 10 months, we also made big strides in our next product candidate, QuickShot Testosterone. Our fourth quarter and year-end 2013 financials reflect the significant investment we made in the launch of Otrexa. We spent nearly $9 million in 2013 on sales and marketing, pre-launch product positioning, branding, third-party payer positioning, and new personnel. We also invested over $6 million in Otrexa inventory, which is on the balance sheet at year-end in anticipation of 2014 product sales. Additionally, we also completed a Phase 2 program for QuickShot Testosterone. Our legacy business of product sales, royalties, and development revenue from our partners contributed significantly towards this investment, where we had nearly $21 million of revenue. Our cash position remained strong at $69 million at the end of 2013. So now moving on to the fourth quarter and full year results. Total revenue was $4.7 million and $20.6 million for the 3 months and year ended December 31st, 2013, compared to $5.5 million and $22.6 million for the comparable periods in 2012. Product revenue was $900,000 and $11 million for the 3 months and year ended December 31st, 2013, compared to $1.4 million and $9.1 million for the comparable periods in 2012. The decrease in product revenues in the fourth quarter was primarily due to a decrease in sales of our oxybutynin gel 3% Gelnique to Actavis, as Actavis assumed all manufacturing of Gelnique in the third quarter of 2013 as contracted. The product revenue increase of almost 20% for the full year was primarily due to $6.2 million of initial sales to Teva of our Vibex auto-injector for Teva's generic epinephrine auto-injector product. 2013 product revenue contained no Otrexa sales as a product launched in 2014. Development revenue was $1.5 million and $4.1 million for the 3 months and year ended December 31, 2013, compared to $1.1 million and $7.4 million during the same period of 2012. The decrease for the full year was due to a reduction of $2.7 million in development revenue earned under the Actavis license agreement. The remaining development revenue in each year was generated primarily from auto-injector and pen-injector development work for Teva. Licensing revenue was $600,000 and $800,000 for the 3 months and year ended December 31, 2013, compared to $1.3 million and $2.1 million during the same period of 2012. Revenue for the fourth quarter of 2013 was primarily related to revenue recognized under a promotion and license agreement with Leo Pharma. Revenue for the fourth quarter of 2012 was primarily related to a non-recurring payment of $1,250,000 received from a pharmaceutical partner, and licensing revenue for the full year 2012 also included an upfront fee received in connection with our license agreement with Daewoong Pharmaceuticals for oxybutynin gel product for South Korea, along with license revenue recognized in connection with our license agreement with Actavis. With respect to the $5 million milestone payment received in the fourth quarter from Leo Pharma, accounting revenue recognition rules dictated that the payment be amortized over a determined period of time, in this case over approximately a three-year period. The same revenue recognition will apply to the second $5 million milestone payment we just received. Revenue from royalties was $1.7 million and $4.7 million for the 3 months and year ended December 31st, compared to $1.7 million and $3.9 million for the comparable periods in 2012. We received royalties from Tevin Ferring related to needle-free injector device sales and or HGH sales, and from Metapharmas on sales of Elestrin. We also received royalty payments from Actavis on sales of Gelnique 3%, which began in the third quarter of 2012 and was the primary reason for the increase in royalties in the year-to-date period. Total gross profit increased in the fourth quarter of 2013 to $4.1 million, compared to $3.8 million in 2012, and decreased for the year to $11.4 million in 2013 compared to $13.1 million in 2012. The decrease for the full year was primarily attributable to decreases in development and licensing revenue. Total operating expenses were approximately $10 million and $8.8 million for the fourth quarters of 2013 and 2012, and approximately $32.3 million and $24.5 million for the years ended December 31st, 2013 and 2012, respectively. The increase in 2013 were primarily due to expenses related to sales and marketing activities in connection with preparation for the commercial launch of Otrexa. Also contributing to the increase in operating expenses was an overall increase in personnel as the company added employees in 2013 in areas such as sales and marketing and quality assurance. Net loss was approximately $5.6 million and $5 million for the fourth quarters of 2013 and 2012, and $20.5 million and $11.4 million for the years ended December 31st, 2013 and 2012. Net loss per share increased for the year to 16 cents in 2013 from 10 cents in 2012, primarily due to an increase in operating expenses in connection with Otrexa pre-commercialization activities. Net loss per share was 4 cents for the fourth quarters of both 2013 and 2012. At December 31st, 2013, cash and investments totaled approximately $69 million compared to approximately $85 million at December 31st, 2012. Lastly, our policy has been to not offer specific financial guidance. In regards to 2014, given that Otrexa launched just 5 weeks ago and monthly prescription trends are not available, we believe it would be premature to directionally guide the street on Otrexa revenue. Our legacy business of royalties, development revenue, and device sales to our partners will remain stable or potentially grow depending on new business development and further progress of our TEPA programs. We will look to revisit our broad directional guidance once we have sufficient Otrexa prescription trends. And with that, I'll turn the call back to Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. 2013 was really an exciting year for Antares and our shareholders. And in the last 4 months alone, we announced the approval of Otrexa injection by the U.S. FDA, and the launch to rheumatologists 3 months later. We've also announced an exclusive promotion and marketing agreement with Leo Pharma for detailing Otrexa to dermatologists for symptomatic control of severe psoriasis in adults. And under the terms of this agreement, we've already received $10 million and may receive a total of $10 million more in additional milestone payments as we make progress. And Leo Pharma have already launched the product to dermatologists the past week, as I mentioned. We also had positive results from a multi-center clinical study evaluating the pharmacokinetic profile of testosterone administered once weekly by sub-Q injection at doses of 50 and 100 milligram using the Vibex quick shot device in testosterone-deficient adult males. And in October, data from our three Otrexup clinical studies were presented at the ACR meeting in San Diego. And the clinical study data comparing the systemic availability of methotrexate using Atrexup compared to methotrexate taken orally was actually selected for a prestigious podium presentation. We've continued to grow our IP, new U.S. patent number 8562564, entitled Prefilled Syringe Jet Injector was issued. And this patent is designed to protect the use of medicament-containing prefilled syringe-based auto-injectors, such as those used in Atrexup and QuickShot testosterone. We also announced the receipt of a notice of allowance from the USPTO for our application, along with U.S. patent 825947 granted in August of 2012, related to the use of our injector technology for wet dry injectable drugs such as lyophilized biologicals or peptides that require dry storage to assure stability. I believe that our progress in 2013 is really only the beginning now. We set a path forward that will continue to reload our pipeline every time a product is approved. We've got state-of-the-art device technology based on robust engineering, and we intend to add at least three new pipeline projects to our portfolio this year and move them in development in a rapid fashion towards the goal of launching at least one product per year on average going forward. On the partnership side of the business, we expect our Teva relationship will continue to flourish, and we expect to reveal the identity of Pen One as it has been submitted to the FDA. Teva will, of course, control the announcement. We are 1 year closer to the potential launch of a generic EpiPen in 2015, pending FDA approval, and we expect that Pen 2 will be filed in Europe somewhere within the next 12 to 18 months. So it's an exciting time here at Antares. In 5 short years, since we implemented the Focus, Fix, and Grow program, we've been able to transform this organization into a specialty pharma company. We're now in the growth phase, and we're launching a product using our own technology platform as the base for a whole pipeline of opportunities. I know that going forward, we expect to exhibit higher levels of productivity and results than ever before. We have built a culture here that is attracting great people to join our organization. We have a novel and sustainable business built on solid science, strong intellectual property, disciplined marketing, and good strategic planning. With that, I'd like to thank everyone for their attention and hand this over back to the operator for the Q&A session.
Thank you, sir. If any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the 2. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received, and there will be a short pause while participants register for a question. The first question comes from Louise Chen from Guggenheim. Please state your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I had a few. So first question I had was, how do your actual sales for Atrexib look relative to the IMS data, and is IMS data even a good proxy for your sales? Second question I had, was something that people have been asking me, which is, can you explain how your Atrexib product compares to the MEDAC product? I know that's not approved yet, but just curious what you think there. And then another question people have asked me is, what percent of generic methotrexate products are given by injection currently? And then last one is, what is Leo's estimate of the market opportunity for psoriasis and maybe for Atrexib in general, if they had any validation of your product? Thank you.
Thanks, Louise. This is Paul. I'll ask LaRue to comment in a few minutes because he's actually on the line as well. With respect to the actual sales relative to the IMS data we're tracking, I think it's fair to say that from the data I've seen, the IMS numbers are lower than the shipments we're making to pharmacies. And on the other comment regarding MEDAC, that's a subject that's under litigation. I can't really comment on how our product compares to theirs, because I haven't actually seen their product, and it's not yet approved in this country. But I think that what we have with our Atrexup product is the best auto-injector on the market. Clearly, we've got a market opportunity that's large, and it's not surprising that other people would choose to copy us. But our intent here is to continue to progress with the commercialization plans for Atrexup based on the unique value proposition that we've already brought to the market. And I know we're going to be successful. I'd like to now just hand this over to LaRue to answer the question about the percentage of generics of prescriptions that are currently given by injection for methotrexate. And with respect to the Leo sales numbers, they Haven't given any guidance on those, but I think if you look to the biologicals market, just as a rough guide, the biological segment of the market for psoriasis is about $5 to $6 billion, compared with about $17 billion for the rheumatoid arthritis market. And if you prorated those numbers, you'd be looking at a product with sales estimates somewhere in the $50 to $75 million range. So let me just hand over this out to LaRue just to talk about the percentage of prescriptions that are available by injection today. LaRue, can you just comment on this? Apparently you can't. Hey, LaRue? Okay. Well, maybe, Louise, I'll tell you what I know, which is that the percentage of injections today is a fraction of the total prescriptions for methotrexate is about 5 or 6% are given by injectable today. All of the market research we've done has shown that the injection market, if an auto-injector were available at home, would probably grow to somewhere between 15 and 20% of the injections that are available. So there's obviously a lot of growth to go there with respect to the injectable space.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Avika Fell from Oppenheimer. Please state your question.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the questions and the providing the update. If LaRue's not on the line, maybe Paul, you might have some insight here. But I believe you mentioned that the Salesforce has hit 90% of target offices so far, and I was just wondering how many visits. Does it take to convey the full sales message for Atrexup and potentially start to see scripts being written?
Yeah, that's a good question, and we're a new company coming into this market. But in general, with any new pharmaceutical product that goes out to the market from a company like Antares, it probably would take between 6 or 7 visits to be able to sort of be there front in mind of the prescriber. So. We've made more than one call to some of the rheumatologists now, particularly the ones that have high prescribing potential. And we're continuing to focus, based on data, our sales force on hitting the right targets.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. And then just a quick question for Bob. So with Leo now launched in Derm, could you just remind us again the accounting treatment for recognizing revenues and then paying Leo their sales share?
Sure. I mean, you know, as far as the first answer for milestones, like I said in the in my speech, the milestone will be recognized over approximately 3-year period, pretty much equally. And then when we receive the if we receive the milestone on sales based numbers, that'll be recognized over the remaining period. From a revenue recognition standpoint on the product sales, we book all the product sales, and so we will be booking them as they come in initially based on prescription data. Because obviously, you know, we don't have a history yet of Otrexup sales, and so accounting literature dictates that you have to use pull-through. And so we'll be booking them off of net sales of prescription data. And then what we pay Leo will be a sales and marketing expense. And so we book the total revenue of the product in the marketplace, and then we will then pay them, and it just goes to sales and marketing expense.
Great. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Akiva.
The next question comes from Corey Davis from National Alliance. Please state your question.
Thanks very much. First question is, I think you said that Otrexup's not really going to compete with the orals nor the biologics, so question would be, where would you anticipate the sources of new business are mostly going to come from?
Yeah, Corey, that's a good question. And what we're trying to do here, as we mentioned during the prepared remarks, is that a lot of patients will start on oral methotrexate. What happens then usually is that they become what's known as a methotrexate failure, where they become intolerant to or they get an inadequate response to methotrexate orally. And the reason for this is because of the plateau effect. When you get above 15 milligrams of a dose, actually 15 milligrams and above, any additional oral methotrexate that you take does not get absorbed. So a patient might get 20 milligrams of oral methotrexate and they get no benefit from that additional 5 milligram dose of methotrexate in terms of therapeutic efficacy, but they get the side effects associated with it, particularly the GI ones. Where we believe methotrexate is going to be really helpful to patients is allowing patients to continue using methotrexate and titrating up to higher doses like 20 and 25 milligrams using injectable where you don't get as many sort of GI disturbances, and being able to keep a patient on the product longer before they have to move into a biological prescription. And then once patients are on biologicals, they continue to take methotrexate as well. So they can continue to take Atrexup. There's evidence also that I've seen from studies that the use of methotrexate with biological agents actually prolongs their utility in patients who have rheumatoid arthritis. So I think that what we're trying to do here is bridge that gap between the oral DMARDs and the biologicals and then keep those patients on that bridge with Atrexup, because this is a chronic disease. These patients can be on these drugs for decades, and our intent is to try and keep them on Atrexup for as long as possible.
And now that it's been out there for a couple of weeks, how are you feeling about how you price the product?
We're feeling pretty darn good, thank you very much. I think we actually got the marketing of this one dead on. We've had good receptivity. Managed care has embraced this product. We have more than 63% of lives covered now. We continue to get additional lives covered, so they get the value proposition. And I think we price the product at a fair price and one that gives us a good margin.
Yeah, I think, Corey, what's important is, you know, what it ultimately will cost the patient. And, you know, most patients are seeing like a $40 to $60 copay, and then we do have copay assistance that brings them down to approximately $10. And so for a patient, it's no different than using a generic tablet. From a third-party payer standpoint, they're happy because if we can delay the use of a biologic or extend the use of methotrexate, it saves them a tremendous amount of money in the long run on that patient that is on therapy basically their whole life. And so I think the pricing has been, where we price it has been spot on.
Yeah. We're very happy with the response we've had, Corey.
So this is LaRue, and I don't know whether anybody heard my response to Louise's question earlier. I seem to have lost contact there for a few minutes. But the other thing I'd like to add to that question, Corey, is that the value proposition is actually appreciated not only by the payers, but also by rheumatologists and potentially by patients, because we are not competing against oral methotrexate. We're not trying to replace oral methotrexate. So they can continue to use their anchor product, their first go-to DMARD that they want to use in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. And then as the disease progresses, their treatment needs to progress. But now they have the option to use subcutaneous methotrexate and extend and enhance that methotrexate pharmacology and efficacy that they have used as their first choice before they need to consider other options like the expensive biologic. So we're not actually competing against oral methotrexate, which is cheap and generic, which is what the payers like, and we're not actually competing against biologics. They can still use biologics, and they will as the disease progresses. Many patients will still need to go on to a biologic, but many patients can do quite adequately and satisfactorily low disease control on Otrexup.
Okay.
Thanks, LaRue.
Last question would be, without commenting on the litigation, have you ever bumped into Medac before in other pens, other areas? And if so, why not? And if you have, what has the outcome been?
The answer to the question is, Corey, no, we haven't. We have never come across Medac before in any of the markets we work in for auto-injectors, certainly. I believe they're an oncology company.
So is the pen their own invention? Sorry, I should probably know the answer to that question. Or is it licensed?
I can't comment on that, Corey. I just don't know.
Okay. I'll leave it at that. Thanks for the answers.
Thanks very much, Corey.
The next question comes from Wang Zili from Ladenburg. Please state your question.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. I'm a new associate working with MedCap and Ladenburg. So I have a few questions. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we've got you.
Great, thank you. So my first question is try to get some more color on the Otrexup launch. Specifically, I want to see what kind of specific feedback and receptions you get from the rheumatologists. As you mentioned, you receive a lot of positive feedback. So I want to hear a little bit more details. And other, also, do you hear any kind of negative or concerns from the rheumatologists?
Okay, well, I'll hand that back to LaRue, who's right on top of this one. LaRue?
Yes, thank you, Paul, and a great question. One of the key things that we do is sort of a plan, do, check, act policy here at Antares. So we continuously monitor and get feedback from rheumatologists directly through sales representatives, but also through market research. In fact, we just completed our first ATU with over 100 rheumatologists to kind of stay on top of the pulse, so to speak. And to be more specific, what I can tell you without a doubt is that there's a very high intent to prescribe, a willingness to prescribe, an understanding of the clinical utility and the benefit that Otrexup can provide to these patients as their disease progresses. I can tell you that there's an appreciation of the support services that we provide, and especially the samples that we make available to initiate treatment. And more importantly, the training materials, the step-up startup kit, which includes the video, a patient brochure, a trainer device, a reusable trainer device that the nurse, office nurse or even the rheumatologist can use to demonstrate to the patient how to self-administer, and then they can, in fact, administer the first dose in the office if they so choose to do. So the feedback is positive on the support materials, the services, and the intent to prescribe, the willingness to use is high, and we have had a positive response from, in fact, we haven't had a negative response. We haven't had any rheumatologists say that they do not see any place for Otrexup. So I'll leave it at that unless you have more specific questions.
Okay, thanks very much. So just related to that, you said that there is this training device. I was just wondering, usually how long or how many rounds training does it take to, you know, get the patient comfortable and to inject themselves?
Well, I'm going to speculate, which I probably shouldn't do, but I'm going to speculate based on the actual human use study and the trainer validation studies that we did, where most patients, I believe 98%, of patients found this device easy to use, were able to use it by simply following the instructions without any specific training provided by a healthcare professional. In fact, as you can see on the device itself, on the product itself, on the label, it's an easy three-step process. You simply remove the cap, remove the safety, and then gently but firmly push down on the area where you're going to inject, which is usually the belly or the thigh. You hold it down for count to 10, and the injection is done. So it's not a very complex process. I think the single biggest factor that we now get feedback from is despite the fact that you don't see a needle or feel a needle, patients still know there is a needle, and needle phobia is something that is very common. So there is still a hesitancy to, am I really going to do this? And again, going back to our studies, we found that patients who actually successfully injected themselves then said, is it done? Have I actually? Is it really done? Have I injected myself? So, you know, that very first attempt, there may be some apprehension, some concern, some fear as they do something which they've never done before. But again, as we saw in the studies, once they've done it, it's like, oh my gosh, it's amazing to see the response that they've actually done something which they thought was going to be difficult or painful or whatever.
Okay, that's great. So that maybe additional two questions. The another question is, you mentioned this copay card to reduce the copay from $40 to $6 to about $10 by the patient itself. So I just wonder how this copay card program works. So you pay the extra money, like a $30 to $50, or is it just more like a loan or interest something?
The roof?
Yeah, no, again, good question. And as Paul had said earlier, our goal is to make it as easy as possible. So simply a credit card type or debit card. It's just a card that you receive from your physician office when you receive your training, or you can download it from the web as a piece of paper, and you simply take this to the pharmacy where you want your Drexup prescription filled. You hand that card or piece of paper to the pharmacist, and from that point on, it's all automatic. The card number is a unique identification for that patient in that patient's payer plan, and it stays valid for 12 refills or a 12-month period, whichever is over first, and it pays the copay up to $50. So let's say the copay was $70. The copay card would pay down $50, and the patient would pay $20. If the copay was $30, the copay card would buy down $20, and the patient would pay $10. There's always going to be a minimum $10 copayment required for the patient. So there's no, you know, as far as the patient's concerned, there's nothing else to do. They just simply hand that card over to the pharmacist, and everything else is automatic. Does that answer the question?
Yes, they were helpful. But does the patient need to pay back the $50, you know, like a year later or something?
No. It's the patient doesn't pay. The only financial obligation the patient has is to pay their insurance copayment to the pharmacist when the prescription is filled. And so for a Tier 3 branded product, that's normally between $40 and $70. So if you took that prescription to the pharmacy, the pharmacist would say, that's $50, please. In this case, they've given them the card, and the card is now worth, if it's a $50 copay, the card would buy down $40. That's charged to us at Interes. We pay that $40, and the patient pays $10. And this is administered by a third-party copay assistance vendor that does this for pharmaceutical companies, and it's a very easy process. We get billed once a month for all of the copay assistant cards that were processed.
Yeah. So the answer to the question is basically the patient just pays $10. That's it.
Okay, great. Very helpful. Thank you very much. So the last question, change a little bit direction. So for the quick shot testosterone, for the PICA study, I just want to get some additional qualitative details. Specifically, I wonder, do you able to get over 75% of the patient into the normal T range, because the FDA has a designated Tmax parameters. So the data you show is like a mean average concentration. So I just try to get some more color on the Tmax. Do you specifically, can you get over 75% of patients to use the normal T range without exceeding the FDA designated Tmax parameters?
Yeah, actually, the answer to your question is definitely yes. The data we got from that trial was phenomenally good. We had very nice flat blood level curves on administration of the drug. As you probably saw from, or heard from the data we just described, we were able, with the doses we had, to get to the upper range of the normal, as well as the lower range of the normal. So we've now got a dosing range there within that window that you need to hit in order to make sure that patients are actually within that range therapeutically. We've got a meeting coming up with the agency. We're going to be planning our phase 3 clinical pharmacokinetic study with them. But we believe we have the right product right now for testosterone replacement. It's an easy-to-use, once-weekly injection. Gives you phenomenal blood level control, and also with very low variability. We haven't shown this in any of the data we've put out so far, but we did run a comparison arm with an intramuscular injection, and the data we saw on that was much more variable than we'd seen with the subcutaneous shot. So I'm very confident about where we are with the Trexup. I'm very confident where we are with testosterone. The other thing that I think I would say is that with all of this back behind us now, our goal in the company is to continue to develop these pipeline projects like testosterone. We're going to be adding another 3 this year, so we'll have half a dozen pipeline projects by the end of the year. And if we can continue to have the hit rate we have with Atrexup and now with testosterone, I think that the value we're adding and creating at this company is quite significant. The other thing on testosterone, I would just say, I don't know if anyone has been following the news events recently, but I think the approval of a bead is actually a good thing for Antares. It paves the way for a new branded injectable product into the market. And there was more good news this week from the, actually it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association on March the 5th of this month, where several authors actually were looking at the positive benefits of testosterone, particularly actually on the cardiovascular system. And I'd urge anyone who's interested in this field to try and get hold of that JAMA article. It's on page 961, and review that because it actually validates everything we believe about testosterone as a product. So it's a very exciting future here.
Great. You have a thank you.
Thank you very much.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone. To cancel this request, please press the star followed by the 2. There appear to be no further questions. I will now turn the conference back to Jack Howarth for any closing remarks.
Thanks, Grace, and thanks again for joining us on today's conference call. If you have any follow-up questions, you can reach me at 609-359-3016. This completes today's call.
This concludes the Antares Pharma fourth quarter and full year financial results conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.